You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Phoenix Five. We're going to look back at the tournament so far, and we're going to talk about all things England. So special of the Phoenix Five. This week we're joined by Adam Miller and David Holland. So we're going to go straight into it. No fucking about. Straight in. We're in the final. Bosh. Holland, how you feeling?
It's England, isn't it? I want to be like it's coming home and swing off buses like I've been seeing today. But it's England and it's not over yet. And, you know, and I still can't believe that we're even with a chance of winning it, let alone being in the final. But, I've seen some madness today and I think, oh, man, Italy, it's Italy. And they've been playing well.
Miller, how are you feeling? You're in Germany at the moment, in enemy territory, behind enemy lines. What are you feeling?
Yeah, pretty much same as Holland. You know what I was like before the tournament started? I was worried that we wouldn't even get out of group stage at the beginning. I just didn't think the team structure, had enough about it to go and open teams up and score, like what we saw against Scotland pretty much. I was concerned that we wouldn't have enough to break teams down. Italy's been my bet for the tournament, so that's why I'm a bit fucked here.
Do you know what?
I've got a nice wager on them.
I think me and Miller have been quite similar on England in terms of like the ability in the squad. It's funny how you win a couple of games and all of a sudden Southgate's the best manager since sliced bread. The England squad's the best squad we've ever had. It's the better than 96. It's better than 2002. I just think the England's actual team, what's helped massively is the clicks have gone. When you look at the team now, you've got Aston Villa player, you've got a West Ham player, Leeds player, a real important integral part of the team. It's not just Man United, Liverpool and Chelsea and Arsenal as it has been in the past. And I think that's massively helped this group of players. I don't think the squad depth is there outside of the wingers. I don't think England have ever had an abundance of players to come in on the left and the right than we've ever had. We've had better strikers in terms of Shearer, Sheringham, Owen, Rooney, better defenders in Rio, Terry, Ashley Cole, and so on and so on. But the ability to interchange the top or the midfield left and right side, we've never had that before. I mean, Rashford, going into the tournament, we would all have said, not all of us maybe, but Rashford would have been a starter or Sancho would have been a starter in the England 11. Would that be a fair point to say, ahead of Saka and ahead of Grealish?
No, not
from
for me.
History. No, yeah, not for me either. But from Southgate in qualifications with Rashford, he was a go-to guy. Like Sterling's always been a go-to guy.
Yeah.
But Sterling's proven why he is the go-to guy. Where Rashford, in qualification, he does a job, but he doesn't stand out. When the guys that are actually coming in and taking their chances, they're actually making a difference to the game. And that's why I think he's playing on merit and who he thinks. I really like the way that Southgate has chopped and changed the attacking trio sort of thing, depending on the opponents.
Holland?
I like what he's done there.
You know, I agree. I don't think Rashford has been great recently, and I'm glad he's not been playing. I can't have him ahead of Saka. Saka's been Arsenal's best player all season, so he's been dragging his club. Even though we haven't done great, he's been dragging his club out. So he deserves his place in the team. I don't see what Rashford's been doing to even want a place in it.
No, I don't disagree with what you said. I think you misunderstood what I was saying. Is if I said to you, right, England's five games, Saka plays three of them, Sancho plays one, and Rashford doesn't start, and Grealish doesn't necessarily play more than a bit part player, would you not have been surprised by that going in? No one saw Saka going as his first, as Miller just said, Rashford was one of his go-to guys, and he's kind of not even gotten on the bench off the bench for most of the games. That's what the surprise is. And I think that's a good surprise, not a negative. I think Saka's done very well in the games he has played. So let's start at the beginning, basically. I'm going to start with Southgate, first of all. Miller, you just said you've enjoyed the way he's kind of changed the team round and introduced people off the bench. And has he impressed you, Southgate, overall then?
He surprised me. And you've got to give him credit where it's due with the decisions that he's made. They've all come off. So he was a bit harsh last night with the sub-sub, but that's the one for later on in the chat. Yeah. He surprised me. His game management was always under debate with our group and stuff like that. I still think he's a bit slow in making a change, as in not just subs, not fresh legs, not that type of change, formational change or directional change to the way the game is playing. So yeah, he surprised me, and fair play to him. He isn't acting or coming across as the yes man that the media and everybody else portrayed him at the beginning. He's doing it his way, so fair play to him.
Holland, anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I like what he's doing. I like the fact that you don't know what team he's going to pick game by game. I was watching something the other day talking about England of old, and that Sven-Göran Eriksson announced his team, his starting lineup, 5 months before the tournament started. And then like the players that were in the back, he said it affected them because they knew they didn't have a chance. I loved it that you don't know what, and if we don't know who he's going to pick, how does a team playing against him know who he's going to pick? And how do you prepare for that? So I like that about him, and I like that he is brave in what he does. You know, like Grealish came on against Germany and scored and assisted Kane for his first goal, and he didn't play at all in the game after. It's horses for courses. I like that about him. Whereas, you know, like going back of old, we could name the team before a World Cup was even announced. So I like that side of it with him. We may have more players, more selection now, but he's not picking players based on name and the club they play for. He's picking them based on their form. Because if it was based on the club they play for, Rashford would have played and he'd be playing every game. So, yeah, I like that about him.
So with Henderson, you're right. You're right. I mean, I've said before in the past podcast and on WhatsApp, I've been not critical of him. I haven't watched a lot of England between the last tournament and this one, as I said. But the jury's still out for me. I know he's done very well in the games he's done. Like Miller said, his game management, you're a little bit slow. I think what he's impressed me in all the games is in the past when we're 1-0 up against Croatia, 0-0 against Scotland, even 1-0 up against Germany. In the past, it was all that fault that 90 minute, 89 minute, they're going to get an equaliser or they're going to get a goal. And I think our in-game management of the players as well, of how to close out a game, has massively improved from what I saw 3 years ago when we got knocked out by Croatia. I think the way he's managed the press and the way he's managed the players in terms of the hype, I think it's been outstanding. Apart from last night where he broke character almost and was, you could see the emotion pour out of him to get to a final. But he's earned that. Every other game, he's been very calm and collective. He's come out and called England out on their history. I mean, a lot of people think that England have this rich history of European football. They don't. If you look at how many finals we've reached in 66, this is the first one. So we haven't got this utopia of amazing football that people sometimes pin against England internationally. I think he's got his team selection wrong twice. But obviously he's got the points on the board, so it looks better than it does maybe. I think last night, obviously jumping ahead slightly, I think that game could have been won in 90 minutes if he changed to a 3-5-2 earlier on and he made the changes earlier on. I think he's now in a very difficult situation as the early 3 or 4 games at the beginning, he could take those risks and change the formation and didn't worry about the impact. I think now, and the last night's game showed, he was slow to make the changes. In the 90th minute, we got the win and we deserved it. It was the better team, 100%. But I think he could have made the change of 3-5-2 a lot earlier on. And we said this on the WhatsApp, you know, I said it at the time, I think the 3-5-2 would have saw that game out inside the 90 minutes. But overall, I think he's impressed. And I think everyone's been pretty impressive. So far, lads, who would you say is the standout player of the tournament? Holland?
Raheem Sterling has had an absolute blinding tournament, and I'm happy for him because he takes some stick and it's unwarranted. Like going into the tournament, he wasn't in form, but he has proved like this tournament how unbelievable. But do you know what who I think England's best player was, and he's come out of nowhere, was Calvin Phillips. For me, him last night was unreal. Like I say, Declan Rice went off for Henderson, but for me, he has been the shock of the tournament because no one even expected him to start. But how he's played for me, I think he's been the player that's got us, you know, without being the hero of scoring goals, he has been the young sun hero for me.
Miller, would you agree with that?
Yeah, like obviously we have debates about formations and what people do off the ball. And he sets the tempo of the game, shutting people down. And like we are normally a 90s podcast and we've spoken about previously, the so-called golden generation that Holland don't like the name of. And the players, you knew, like what you said about Sven, picking the team. Everybody knew who was going to start. But for a player like him to come in and actually have the impact and the desire, and he plays like an old school type player that isn't scared to actually leave a little bit on someone. He's clever with it. He's subtle. But you know, when he's coming in with everything. And I really like watching that type of player, you know, from previous. But it's not only what he does defensively. For me, Rice is too much of a crab in this tournament. He's very slow. He moves it sideways too much or backwards. But when Phillips gets, he's some, not all the time. He does a bit of the crab movement as well. But he does also try to take it on the half turn and drive forward and play the forward passes, where I think Rice is playing safe and he's cheating that midfield role.
I think it's a bit harsh. I don't think he's cheating it. I do think that going into the tournament, Declan Rice has been talked up quite a lot by people I know. Got guys in the WhatsApp group, a big fan of Declan Rice. And I've always said I've not seen enough of him to kind of warrant how good he is or what he's going to be. And on the tournament, I think he's done his job very quietly and very effectively. But as you said, Miller, quite rightly, Calvin Phillips just looked a bit better player. It looks a bit more of a more intelligent player. And I didn't even think that coming into the game. I didn't think Calvin Phillips was, you know, I mean, Jude Bellingham, for me, if I was in the pit my 11, he would have been in the 11 from the start of the tournament because he's such a mature player and he's not getting a sniff. I mean, this is just saying, we said about depth earlier. I don't think we've had I think we've had a better squad depth and I do stick by that. But yeah, Calvin Phillips has been very impressive. I mean, for me, as you said, Holland, Sterling, I mean, the stickies, I've got WhatsApp groups going on and I'll take him off this, that, and about Sterling. I don't think people that don't, I'm sorry, I'll rephrase that. I think people that don't understand football don't understand how good Sterling is. I think if you understand football and you watch him play, he's a risk taker. And with risk takers, they do run into blind alleys because they're trying to beat that man or they're trying to do something special with the ball. And if you watch him off the ball, how many players he draws out of defence and moves away. So Harry Kane has got the space. Harry Kane, this tournament, has sat deeper and he hasn't been used effectively by Southgate, but it's worked the way he's done it. So you can't criticise that. You know, you can't always, in the past, we always set up England teams against for Rooney or for Kane, Rooney or for Shearer or for Owen. And it was all a central player to get it to him and let's see what he does. And the pressure was massive. Kane came in with a lot of pressure and we've taken that pressure off him, or Southgate has. Because it's like, well, we're not just about Harry Kane. We've got other players in this team that can score goals. And Sterling's proven that. I mean, last night he ran into quite a few blind alleys and got tackled quite a bit. But he creates so much and moves the game around so much that people just... And he played 120 minutes last night. And did he look tired at any stage? I don't think so. The engine on the boy is unbelievable.
I think that's what the killing point was for them last night is... The amount of pressure we put on them, and we just look fresher than them. And say in the 90 minutes, from 75 minutes to 90, we could have killed the game off. We was first to everything, purely because of how much movement there was up front, off the ball. Not like let's bang it into Kaney standing still. It, as you said, dragging players about and constantly. Semi-finals, you got to be mentally on point and focused all the time. If you got someone just running and running and running, you got to chase him and your head's gone. You're tired. It's draining. And that's what I think what's happened to the Denmark team, in all fairness. They just lost the legs and the focus went.
Agreed. Well, let's start.
I was going to say, see, I'm going ahead a bit more. See, this game with Italy, I think that might be the defining factor. The fact that Italy are aging. They've got them two centre-backs and we've got all running. I think that's going to be the thing at the end.
We'll come back to that. We will bring that up. You know, obviously, we'll cover that at the end. But first game, we went England 1, Croatia 0. Yeah, that was the kickoff of the tournament. We had a good 10 minutes. It then petered out a little bit. The team selection was quite a surprise. You know, a few changes in there. But from that point, again, people have said, oh, we haven't really played anyone. We've said it in the group, we haven't played anyone really when you think about the teams that we played. We got knocked out by Croatia 3 years ago. Croatia, yes, an aging team, you can say, but they're still a good, experienced team. And they didn't really cause any trouble against us. I think that was game management in that game was the first game I saw Southgate manage a game really well. Anything to bring up on the first game? Any mentions or anything?
I liked how we handled the first game. You need to not lose in the first game. And playing Croatia after what they did to us in the semi-finals of the World Cup previously, there was apprehension going into that game thinking we could lose it and we could have done. So I liked how it wasn't the greatest game and we didn't play the best. but we were effective in what we were doing. We stifled them, and I liked what we'd done in that game. Obviously, you want to go and see 3-4 nils, and you want to see us absolutely hammer teams, but that, you know, you've got to be careful against teams like that. So I liked the way that we played. It wasn't the greatest spectacle, but for me, it was effective, and we got that goal, and I thought we played well. I don't want to play that whole way through the whole tournament and all that sort of stuff, so I like the way that he changes it up. But for that game, I like that.
Okay, then we go on to the old enemies, Scotland, which we all watched together on that game, and it was pretty boring. I know Miller's got an affection for one of the Scottish players that we might come on to later. I think we can all agree on that game. We all expected to win. I think we all thought this should be a 2 or 3 nil, a romper. I think that's fair in saying. And it was quite a dull, stale game. And I think Scotland had the better chances, clear-cut chances. 3 or 4 years ago, we might have lost that game. But again, you've got to take out that aspect. As you said, I think both of you said, it's tournament football. And you've won your second game, which England never done an opening group game. So we've got that off of our back. We've won an opening game. So it gave us a little bit more. We didn't need to go for it against Scotland because we only needed a draw to go through in this tournament because it's 4 points seems to have got most teams through. Any feedback on the Scotland game? Miller?
I think the occasion and the rivalry got to them. And the fact that they never lost put us in good stead going through to the knockout stages, the resilience side of it. But yeah, they should be killing, like, no offence, Ireland. They should be killing teams like Scotland. They should do.
Yeah, you say that, Miller. You say that, but they never do. Name a time when it's happened. No. But the thing is, the game comes up and we've got Scotland at so-and-so time. We're going to win 2-3-0. But when you look back in history, that's never happened.
But that's so what I'm saying, the rivalry, the pressure. It's just, I think it gets too much for them on the pitch. But as I said, it's seemed to have had an effect throughout the knockout stages off the back of it. It set them up. The fact that we got all the way to the semis without conceding, it's unheard of for England.
Well,
we're normally 1-0 down and then we've got to pull it out of the bag.
Well, that goes back again to game management and we're going to the last group game and we knew we was through and I hate when teams then decide to change 11 players and I think he'd done a very good job against Czech Republic in changing the right amount of players just to give some players some game time. And again, I thought he managed this game very well as well. It was very, the changes were come at the right time, the movement of the ball and England felt a little bit more free, but we just had this tendency in all three group stages and it was about 10, 15 minutes of really good on top football and then it just petered out a little bit. Whether that was reserving some of the energy, whether it was, you know, trying to hold a bit back because they knew they was through, I'm not too sure. There wasn't a lot of talking points in that game. Then we obviously got to get through, jubilation, everyone's quite happy. And then obviously we go on to take on, who do we take on next? Who wants to cover the next game? Holland.
The old enemy. And you know what I like? You know when you go to a tournament as well and they start looking about who you can get when you finish? And they try, you know, in the past, like, oh, I hope we finish second because we avoid France and all this other crap. I hate that. And that's another thing we didn't do. We won the group. You know what I mean? And that's for another day. But yeah, no, the old enemy, Germany. And you think, oh my God, the Germans, this is it. We're out. And you do. I don't care what anyone says. Every Englishman thought this was it. You know? And the game went to what 60 odd minutes before we scored, you're thinking the worst. The later it gets and it's 0-0, you think it's going to be a last minute goal. It's going to be one of them ones that breaks your heart. But the changes, I thought the changes made great. Jack Grealish for me made a difference, and I think that's what's good with me. I think that's what Southgate's doing. You know, if you watch all the first half of all the games we played. It's all, like you say, crab stuff. It's slow. I honestly think I put it in the group. I thought I was watching the game in slow motion the first half. But I think that's what he does. He wears you down and then he brings on fresh legs, youngsters, and he kills it off that way. And I think that's exactly what happened to Germany.
Miller?
I was more nervous watching the Germany game than I was last night. The Germany game had me... My anxiety levels were at a peak in that second half. serious stuff it was. I was on the edge of the seat.
Is that from history of England, Germany, more than actually? Because when you look at Germany in this tournament, they were pretty poor defensively. They were easy to get out. I know they're Germany and you give them credit and they've got great players in it. But it was about Asian squads. But do you not think, because I was quite confident in this game. This is one of the only games I was more confident in this game, apart from Scotland, than the two previous foreign nations that we took on. Do you think that's history?
It would definitely be history.
Yeah.
It would definitely be history involved in that. But they just have a knack, or normally, I should say, the German teams in tournament football, in knockout stage, they have a way of finding the win. They're renowned for it. And I just thought, as you said, as soon as we had them, we thought, oh, here we go. It's the Germans again. It's at Wembley. We're fucked. But yeah, I was very impressed with how they dealt with, as I said, from the Scotland game, how they dealt with the pressure of the nation and the history. And I know the way Southgate has done very well with managing the media and saying, look, half of these players weren't even born the last time we played Germany in a tournament. So they ain't carrying the weight of the nation, of history and stuff like that. They're just going out and playing a game of football. And it does come across that way.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point, because when you go back and look at 96, and because that's the last real tournament you can look back at with actually feeling some success again being at Wembley, you're right. I think that the chairs in between 66 and 96 is so far now that these players haven't got that burden in history, and us as fans aren't on their backs as quick as we would have been in the past. You said I know it's a tournament. Everyone's got, you know, tournament management, and Italy and Germany. Germany, as you said, are a tournament team, is what their class is. They just get on turn, they just know how to get that 1-0 win and just...
They're not even bothered in qualifiers. They don't really care about getting through. We want to win the qualifiers every game.
Yeah.
Like Germany and Italy, they just do enough to qualify.
Yeah.
They don't really get going until the tournament.
Yeah. But this is the one thing that I think I've come to realise with Southgate. And the last tournament, I think there was still a mismatch in the squad almost. There was some old players and trying to keep it fresh, but also trying to keep people happy. I think he managed that quite well. I think we didn't play anyone in the last World Cup. And I think that's true to say that we didn't really play anyone. And when we did, we lost. I don't think you can say that in this tournament. I think it's unfair to say, yeah, but you know, you've got the easier side, the draw and this other stuff. Because again, Czech Republic, they're no mugs. Croatia, they've won it. They're no mugs. Germany, they are three very good teams. You can, when you beat a team, it almost like, oh yeah, but they're this or but they're that or they're old or they're slow. It doesn't matter. Look at France. They drew with Hungary and got knocked out by Portugal, who Germany beat Portugal by 4 goals to whatever it was.
4-2.
So I don't think, obviously on paper, when we got the draw, it was the easiest side of the draw on paper. But I don't think anyone's had an easy game in this tournament. I think this has been the best tournament I can ever remember watching for quality of football throughout. No one's been in it and been like, oh, just been white, smashed over all three games. Everyone has given a very good account of themselves, I think, in this tournament. But going back to Southgate, I am starting to think he is an international manager. He's not a club manager. I don't think club football works for him. And I liken him to, I know it's a big leap, to Scolari in Brazil. And I know Brazil had a lot of massive players to work with and the quality was massive. But in club football, he wasn't that great, especially obviously when he came to England. He wasn't that great, but he knew how to play tournament football. And you look at Southgate, his career with the under-21s, I think the women's for a short spell as well in tournament football. And as Holland, you said at the beginning about, you know, we started off quite slow in the first game and even Scotland was, you know, a bit drab. But it's about peaking at the right time. And England have never, ever done that. We peak by game two in most tournaments and then we kind of phase off a little bit. But he's got them rolling. And each game, we've just looked a little bit better, a little bit more dominant. We've created a bit more chances. And as you said, the fresh legs coming at the end of games, I think his management's been pretty good.
I would say that change in the five subs has helped him there. I would definitely say the five subs has helped him.
Good point.
I don't agree. I think that's crap. I'm not saying you're crap, what you said, Miller. I think the five subs is shit and I don't like it.
I don't like it, but I think it's helped him as a manager.
I don't feel like he really wants to make subs. Like, I feel like he's making, he made Jack Grealish last night one, and he probably just would have stuck with that if it had been 90 minutes. There's other teams that are utilising them five subs, like Denmark did before the extra time, and then they had to have 10 men because someone got injured, wasn't it? But I don't feel that he has overly used them, if I'm honest with you. I think if we only had three subs like it should be, he would have been quite happy with that.
But that's what I said at the beginning, that he's very slow in making a change, in my opinion.
He's got
five subs there. He's stabilised the game for the first hour, and then bang, now start changing up a little bit. Change the formation, the players.
I think it's definitely a 60-minute thing. I think he waits to the 60th minute, and we are where we are. Like, Ukraine, it didn't matter because we were like 3-0 up at that point. So, you could just make subs. But your 1-0s and your 1-1s, I think his plan is to change things around 60 minutes, bring on Grealish, fresh legs, and Sancho.
That's my question. Last night, he didn't do that. With Denmark,
Grealish came on about the 63rd minute.
So, say that again?
Not later than that. 70s, I think.
Yeah, it was early
60s.
Are you sure?
Late, I'm sure it was late 60s.
But yeah, I think that's the plan, though. I don't like the five subs. So we get, is that going back to three subs next season? Is that a COVID thing? Because I don't like that at all.
Well, I don't know. But he came on the 69 last night. That was his first in 69 minutes. And I felt that at that point, at the 65th, 69 minutes, it was just fine. But that's when he should have changed the formation in that moment, not later on in the game. I think in the 95th minute when he put Foden on for Mount, that's when the system changed. And that's when we looked a lot more dominant, which he should have done in the 60th or 65th minute. Because I think at that point, they were there for the taking. So yeah, I think it was a bit late. But it's fine, we got through. You can't question it in hindsight. I was glad we went a goal down. I must be honest. I know it sounds silly, but I've said in the group quite consistently, I want to see this team go a goal down and see how we react. I don't want to get to the final and then we go a goal down and we don't know what Southgate's made of or how he's going to change things. Does he panic? Do the players panic? I think the players handled themselves very well. They had a 10-minute spell where they were out with the ball and Denmark looked dangerous, which is always going to happen. Denmark are not a bad team. But I think as the players, there was no one looking to rush and make things happen and panicked. Everyone just looked very composed and was like, we'll get chances. Just take our time.
But that's what I was saying about Rice. That's what I was saying about Rice and the easy option. That's what I was saying when he's cheating. He's doing the easy option by going sideways when he could go diagonally straight to a winger and get it to the winger quickly. Get it out to Sterling or Saka. But he's going to Walker and then to Saka, and it slows the game down, makes it easier for the Denmark defence. If he went straight to Saka, it gives him time to actually go at somebody and gets them out of sorts at the back.
Agreed. Would you say...
Back to Walker or to Shaw, it allows them time to set up.
Yeah. I agree. I completely agree. We're talking about Shaw there. I mean, we're talking about redemptions. The Shawshank redemption, so to speak. I mean, he has been phenomenal for Man United this season as well. But I think for England, I think he has been not unsung. He's had the right praise, but I think he's really stepped up and he's just looked so dominating on the left hand side of the team. I think he's stabilised him and Sterling on that side. Have worked very well together. I don't think anyone's played bad for England. It's rare to say that. I don't think anyone you can say. Everyone who plays has deserved their place in the team, but I think Rice would be the only person, as you said, Miller. That would you change it now for the? Let's go on to the final. We're there.
I would keep Rice in there for what he does as a defensive role, shielding Maguire and Stones. What he does there, I would keep him in there. It's just once he's got the ball, it's the urgency, the distribution needs to improve from him. Yeah. In the group stages, him and Phillips had a good little partnership going. They was bouncing off each other. But I think as it's going further into the tournament, the nerves are getting there and he's taking the easy option instead of actually trying to just play naturally like he would at West Ham, like he would in the beginning of the tournament.
Okay, Holland.
Yeah.
I'll say
one thing before... We say every player, Walker for me has been a standout player in the team, and I don't think he's getting enough credit in the media. Defensively, the cover that he offers against across the whole pitch, pretty much, he offers so much more as a defender than what people give him credit for.
Okay. So I'm not disagreeing with you. I think, yes, he does do all that stuff. I just think for him, he gets himself in trouble still too often. And he has to use his pace to get him out of the situation that he's put himself in with giving the ball away. That's my only criticism. If I'm being harsh, I think last night I said to everyone, for me, I would have taken Kyle Walker off to go to a 3-5-2 and move Shaw into the middle of the left of the three. And you both disagree, and that's fine. There's no right or wrong to it. But I felt that he just has a tendency to just overstep it a little bit and then turns and recovers very well.
When you have that type of pace, which obviously we've never been blessed with in the group.
Speak for yourself.
Don't, because me and you will end up doing the sprints next.
Oh, you must be joking. It'll be the slowest race ever.
Yeah, when you've got that type of pace, you know you've got it in your bag to get you out of trouble. So maybe, yeah, he does take liberties with his positioning, but he doesn't have to rely on his positional sense. He has the pace to recover.
Okay.
So, yeah.
No, for me, he... His part, I don't know, his passing's crap. If anyone's misplaced the ball, anyone in that team and over this tournament, it's more anymore, it's him. But for Stones and Maguire to be the defender they are, they rely on him because the ball goes over the top. He's like this sweeper. I like it when they play him in the centre with them, because them two are like big lads who can head the ball out. They're strong presence. But you see, the ball does go over the top. They know that he's going to be able to sweep it up. And I think he's invaluable. Like when you said to take him off last night, I was like, hell no, man. He, like I say, you can rely on him to get back if they do get like a one-on-one situation. Chances are you catch him. Stones and Maguire are not catching him. Ball goes over the top. It's like when he pulls you run over our top. I might as well not bother running. But when you've got Walker there, I think he's invaluable to that defence. Like the only criticism for me is his passing. He does give the ball away. He does some shit passing sometimes. He gives the ball away a lot. But defensive qualities, I think he's been outstanding.
So Sunday, it's a big game. It's the first final since 66. It's a massive game. Let's talk about Italy. Millie said it earlier on. I think Holland might have said it earlier on, sorry. Aging team, bit slow. But boy, they've got some quality. I mean, they have some quality in that team. They have been... the most consistent, aside from England, in this tournament. And I think, again, people go, who have they beat to some degree? But, I mean, you've got the two lads at the back who are just absolute dogs. I mean, the last game in the penalty shootout, that penalty shootout was won at the toss. Was it Bonucci who went up to the Spain captain and was hugging him and punched him in the face?
That was Cinelli, wasn't it? Yeah, winding him up.
And then the goalkeeper
was the wrong call on that, yeah.
That was done. It was won. Those mind games, people go, it does matter. Because all of a sudden, you're thinking, hold on, they went into that shootout and they missed the first penalty, but they went into that shootout thinking, we won this. And I just thought from the minute that coin toss, this is over. Experience is massive in these tournaments. And those two boys at the back, just those two, Bonucci and the other fella, lost his name again now, when those two at the centre backs. And then, and then Immobile. And I mean, they are dangerous, very, very dangerous. We haven't come up against a team like that in this tournament at all. So I'll start with Miller. What's your predictions? What's your lineup? What's the style of play? Are we cautious? Do we go for it? What's the result? Does it go to extra time? Miller, tell me.
I don't know, mate, to be honest. I really don't know.
Get off that fence, you bitch. Let's go.
I'm going 2-1 England.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going Mason Mount to get the winner.
Okay.
He won't even be on the pitch then.
Oh, interesting. So, Holland, you don't think Mount's going to start?
No, I know. I think he'll start, but by the time England go on to win, he'll already be subbed.
Wow. Okay. Miller, who...
I can see him turning up. I can see him turning up in the final.
Who's your starting 11?
Let's hope so, eh? Totally turn up in this tournament.
Well, let's do everyone starting level. We all know he's in goals. Pickford, Maguire and Stones in the back. Shaw at left back, Walker at right back. Are we all saying?
Are you saying four?
Sorry?
Are you saying four at the back, or you think he might change it for the final?
I think he's going to go five. I think he's going to put Trippier out. Trippier's going to get in somewhere.
Okay. Well, this is where it becomes interesting. Trippier getting in. I know he likes Trippier. What's the formation then? So, Holland, what you're thinking is going to go 5-3-2?
I think he's going to do something like he did against Croatia, like he did against Germany. But then it's. He put Trippier in before he realised how good Shaw was. How does he keep Shaw out now? I mean, this is a lovely thing for England to problem for England to have because we've never had it.
Pack out the midfield and try it and win the game in there, because by just having Rice and Phillips in there, I think we're going to be too open and they're going to use their experience and pop triangles around us into the pockets and stuff like that. So I think he's going to pack the midfield up.
So what are you saying? 5-3-2 then, with, or are you going 3-5-2?
I'm going 3-5-2.
So who's your three in the middle?
I think you're going to drop Mount into the middle with Rice and Phillips.
Okay. All right.
And so Sterling, Kane up top.
Okay. For me, I would like to see him go 3-5-2. But he isn't going to do that, I don't think. I think he's found his team now, and there's no way he takes this risk in the biggest game of his career. How do we beat Italy? That's the question. How do we...
Yeah, definitely. You don't want to go down early. But the way we beat them is with pace. And we know that. But we need to get the ball. If we ain't got the ball, we're not going to score. So getting them on the counter, and that is a dangerous game to play. Yes, we've got a good, solid team unit that has proven it in the tournament so far. But have we come up against a team like Italy that can keep the ball and move the ball as good as they have in the tournament? I don't know, to be honest. That's why I'm thinking he's going to try and make them play out in the wings and pack out the middle. Because if they are playing through the middle on us, I think they're going to open us up.
Okay, interesting. See, for me, I think he goes the same formation but adds Sancho in. But that's what I would do. But I think he'll stick with Saka. I think the team that he played yesterday,
I think Saka offers more defensively than what Sancho does.
Potentially, maybe, yeah. Not for me personally, but let's say it does. I think the first 10 minutes are very important. I think the first 10 minutes, I think England have to come out of the traps fast, high press and push and test them early on. I think that's, for me, you go hell for leather for the first 10 minutes and really apply yourself, because you know we can recover because we've got the legs and they haven't. You hit them out of the block for the first 10 minutes and then nothing comes of it. Then you start sitting back and you stay compact and you stay difficult until the 65th minute, and then you can start changing things. And I think in this game, all five subs will be used by Southgate. I think he will use all five subs in this game. And I think if we're going to see a tactic, I mean, Mancini is a better manager than Southgate. We all agree with that. Tactically, we'd all agree that Southgate is behind Mancini in terms of tactically in the past we've seen. But I think we've got better match winners off the bench. I think we've got about four or five players on that bench that you could easily come on and you could think he could nick a game here. I think you've got Rashford. I think you've got Grealish. You've got Sancho if he's not starting. And I think there's an unsung hero somewhere in there that's going to pop out of nowhere and score a goal. I don't think it's going to be clear cut. Anyone think it's going to go to extra time and penalties? That's the big one.
I would take extra time because I think that's when we can win it. I think I'm a firm believer in this game where I think I'm happy to keep it tight. I obviously don't do anything silly where we lose it, but keep it tight and take it. No one wants to. Obviously, I'd like to win it in 90 minutes, win it comfortable, but it's the final when we're playing Italy. So I'm going to, you know, I think our way of beating them, and I said it from the start here, is by the younger, fresher legs. And if we're taking them into extra time, I think that's when we can make subs late on and change the game and just be the fitter, younger team. I don't think that there's not a lot of difference in the teams, I don't think, of the way they play. So I think it's going to come down to youth. And I think that's so for me, and going back to starting the team, I would like Foden to start ahead of Mount. for me. I'd like to see Foden start. I thought he hit the post in the first game, didn't he? But he hit the post. That's great. But I liked when he came on the last night as well. I like what he brings to the team. I'm not saying I don't like Mount, and but I would like him to start Foden.
For me, I think Jorginho in the middle of Italy's midfield. I think stop him playing, I think Italy fall apart. Personally,
that's why I think he's going to drop Mount in on him because they know each other at club.
That's
why I think he's going to drop him on him.
I would agree with that. I think the idea would be just to run. I think it'd be Calvin Phillips personally. I think he'll stick Calvin Phillips on him. I think he'll just say to Phillips, just keep an eye on him. Don't let him get into any rhythm.
Yeah. And then you got Rice will be exposed with, what's his name? Verratta?
Verratta moves around. This is why I think for me, the 3-5-2 would work better. I think, but he won't do this, but with 3-5-2, I just think you could afford to drop someone deeper, but in front of Stones and Maguire. You know, Italy play a 4-3-3 historically. That's what they've done throughout the tournament. They haven't really changed it up much. And I think Chiesa's had a very good tournament. I'm going to go bold, and I've not gone bold this whole tournament. I haven't given a prediction to anyone, 3-0. And I think we win in 90 minutes.
That is bold.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. If it comes in, then you'll get just as much praise. But that is some shout.
You know what? Do you know why? I just think he's kept the shackles on this team quite a lot. And I think in the final, I think one of the key things he'll say is keep it tight. We don't want to lose, obviously. But I think he'll use the word express yourself now. And I think he'll use that to the players who have got no fear. They've got no expectations. England have exceeded expectations. You don't want to lose it now. And he doesn't want these players going in. These are young players. Your Fodens, your Sanchos, your Sakas. But you've got that bit of experience with Sterling and players that have lost finals and they've been around finals. And I think he'll just rely on the older heads to be able to maintain the smart part of the game. But the younger guys, I think, will just be able to express themselves a little bit more. And I think the first 10 minutes, we score a goal and I think they collapse. I really think we score one goal in the first 10 minutes. I think they will come under pressure and I don't think they'll be able to recover. As I said, you stop the midfield playing in Jorginho. If you put someone on him, stop him dictating the play, and you can have a high press at the top, and you get, I mean, you can get their wing backs, you can get ahead of those, and you can create space in between Bonucci and Chiellini. You can do it. So for me, Sterling will worry them with that pace. He will worry them, and they will put two people on him. And I think Kane is going to have the best game in an England shirt we've seen yet. I really think it's going to be I know it's going to sound crazy. Not an easy 3-0. It won't be easy. But I think we get a goal in the first time. It's very early on. And I think they capitulate. And by the 70th minute, the legs go and we get a second and quickly followed by a third. So I think 3-0 in and I think Kane scores. And I don't know who scores first, but I think Kane will score and have a great game. And that's my 2 pence into it.
Well, that is some shout. Fair play to you if it comes in. Obviously, we want that. But I'm not as bold as you, and I'm worried about this game. And I'm, you know, 55 years since England won anything. I can't be shouting out 3-0 in a final. So
are you telling me get off the fence?
No, but I never said 1-1. I'm going to say England 2-1. Is my heart rule in my head? Possibly. Yep. I think it's going to be tight. I think it'll be done exactly how we've done it against Denmark. I think it gets done in extra time. As much as I'd love to stand there and do what Paul's done, and he analysed it very well. There's some thought gone into it, but I can't be shouting out 3-0. So I'm going 2-1.
If we do go on to win this, what do you think the chance of the World Cup? Where does that take us? Because historically, the last 10, 15 years, the team that won the European Cup have gone on to win a World Cup straight after with the same squad. And I think if you add another 2 years into this squad with, what is it, 18 months, I think it'll be, because it's in the December World Cup, isn't it? A settled team and a settled squad, you're not really going to get, I don't think, now in the next 18 months, an emerging talent that shines through and bursts onto the scene. We might be wrong, but I think we've got a very good balance. I don't think anyone in this squad won't be at an age where they won't make the next World Cup, apart from maybe Trippier, I would say. Probably won't be part of it. Think if we go on to win this, can England go on to dominate for the next 2 years? That's the question, really. Holland?
Like I say, I
Come on, don't be a normal England fan. Speak properly. This is. Come on, don't be sitting there going, oh, I don't. Do you think if we win this championship in the way we won it, with a manager that seems to be good at tournament management, do you not think going into Qatar, you know, you're adding Argentina that are on the, not I don't know in the final at the Copa America along with Brazil, but them squads aren't what they were 10 years ago. You know.
So basically, long and short of it, you asked me if England going to win next World Cup.
If we win this tournament,
or do well in it.
Yeah, what do you define as doing well? Can we win World Cup? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if we win this tournament, can we go on to then progress, go unbeaten for the rest?
Possibly. I think with a squad we could. Do I think we will? Nah. I know you're telling me just out of defence, but this is the sort of thing that makes us hated all over the world. We haven't even won the Euros yet, and now we're talking about winning the World Cup.
No, but that's what I said. I said, if we went on to win this, these players and this manager, there's not going to be a massive change in players or management in the next 18 months. It's a quicker, it's kind of a lot quicker. We've got a settled squad. We've got a good harmony, and it's in a foreign country, but every stadium's air conditioned. So and the way it's been set out and the thought has gone into how the traveling is going to work, it's almost not like being at home because obviously it's not the same, but the way the transportation's worked and everything, it seems very well organized. And I just think if you ride on success.
Honest answer, no. I don't think they're going to do anything in the World Cup in 18 months.
Okay, anything. That's a bold statement. Anything.
Well, the hype's going to get too much. The media and supporters are going to jump right off the back of this and hype them up. And typical England let us down. That's what I think is going to happen.
I do think we can do well. Winning is a different thing. But winning breeds winning. And so, you know, if we can ride off the weight of actually finally getting the duck off our back and actually winning something as a nation, which could spur us on in a World Cup, the following World Cup. So, yeah, I would expect us to do well. Winning it's a different thing. That's what really I can say.
Do you not think, Miller, because I know you said about the pressure and the build-up of
But what I have got, I've got a question for Paul. Right? Now, you know I don't like this golden generation thing, yeah? Now, if we don't win on Sunday, would we class this team as the golden generation?
No.
Now, if we win it, well, obviously we will. We will, yeah? Oh, if we win it, this will be the golden generation. If we don't win on Sunday, are we going to class this team as a golden generation?
Win or lose, they won't be classed as a golden generation, no.
So how does the team of Beckham and all that be classed then?
Because every single player in that team would have walked into most teams in the rest of the world.
But how is it a golden generation? We've got to a semi-finals of a World Cup and then 2 years later, we've now got to the finals of the Euros. Now, you can't tell me that this team is worse than that team. And that team's called the golden generation.
Yeah, but you're okay. I get what you're saying. I completely understand your logic in what you're saying. But this team is completely different. It's completely different. Absolutely different. That you haven't got the superstar players that you had in that team back there. The word golden generation was quite relatively new in that period in the late 90s, early 2000s, where Belgium are now coming to the exit of their golden generation. I think it's when you've got players that are exceptional. And I don't think, man for man, you pick this team against the England team of 2006, England team of 2002, England team of 2000, England team of 98, England team of 96. Man for man, I don't think a lot of these players get in for those like-for-like replacements. Foden doesn't get in for a Gazza. Foden doesn't get in for a Gerrard. Foden doesn't get in for a Lampard. Stones and Maguire do not get in for a Rio, do not get in for an Adams, do not get in for a Terry. Kane, argument could be, yes, mate, he might get in for a Shearer, but not for me personally, but he could get in. Shaw, yeah, okay, maybe based on this run of tournament, would might get in. But you're
getting ahead of Ashley Cole, no?
Well, there you go. So you Ashley Cole, so...
But like I say, we can chuck this. I hate this golden generation thing. But if you're going to go on success, we had none. So how the hell are we going to be calling them Golden Generation? Now, if we're going to, like I say, if we win it on Sunday, then we've won something. That's the Golden Generation. I don't want to hear no more about that fucking team of whatever it's 2002 or whatever 2006, whatever that team was.
But the Golden Generation, you misunderstand what Golden Generation is. Golden Generation isn't winning things. Golden Generation was the players that you had in a team. This will be, if they win on Sunday, this will be a winning team. It won't be about...
No, but that's bullshit. France had a Golden Generation. They won France 98 with it.
Yeah, they had a Golden
Generation. I think you have to, and 2000. It has to be of winners.
Because
I don't want to hear it.
No, they had a Golden Generation and they won. They had their best squad... arguably, and every French player in that team would have got into any other team, and they would have got into any French team in past or present. That's the difference, and they won it.
So you're telling me the way this England team have played this tournament, they won't get into top teams?
No, David. No, be realistic, David. They wouldn't get into Harry Maguire wouldn't walk into a Barcelona team of 10 years ago or a Man United team of 10 years ago. Let's be realistic.
No, I'm on about now.
Yeah, but if you're looking at
team the way they're playing now, these boys would be picked up by top teams the way they're playing.
Well, yeah,
if I'm a manager, I'm looking at Calvin Phillips and I'm thinking, how much can I pay for him at Leeds?
Right.
How much are they going to sell him for?
Yes, to a point. But if you're looking at the team, as I said earlier, the positive of this team is they do come from different teams: Leeds, Aston Villa, Everton. It's not just coming from the power teams. So I think. Would Pickford get into a top European team? No. And again, I'm comparing it to what England have had in the past. Would they get into another England team? The answer individually, and I think, Adam, you've nodded along with me. Would you agree what I'm saying in terms of individually, they're not like for like, would get into a team of the last 20 years of our generation?
I'd agree with 80, 90% of the things that you were saying, Paul, about the Golden Generation, how it was broken down, was because they was individuals, top players. What we have now is a team spirit. They're not standout superstars individually that's going to be bought after this tournament for 200 million, 300 million. We haven't got that type of player in the team. Sterling is probably the only one, I would say, that people will come in and pay top, top money for. Across Europe, should say. But it's the team. And I think that's the main thing in this tournament and from the last tournament that Southgate has brought back into the whole England squad, cliques, everybody on the tables, singing the national anthems, the bond, the social aspect in the background that's keeping them entertained and not bored, not treating them like kids and to just be adults. I think that's the key in this team. Would I say no, these guys now need to be called the Golden Generation? No, I'll say these are a winning team, as you said, Paul, or they have not won yet, but they are a team that's progressing and growing together. So you asked a question about the World Cup, what I think they would do. I think this hype from this and the last one is going to become too much, and we won't have home advantage in the World Cup.
Okay.
We're lucky that majority of our games have been at Wembley.
Yeah, definitely an advantage on that, I would say. And I think we played the away game at the right time to just take this thing out the tail, the media jumping on the bandwagon and the fans. But
and it was against Ukraine.
And it was against Ukraine.
You know what I mean? You're fucking ideal. You're going to go away and play another team from Wembley.
In a stadium that we're not doing well in as British teams or club level or international level.
Agreed. Well, guys, I mean, it's a different atmosphere this time. Obviously, when we was in 96, we were kids. And then in the early 2000s, we was, you know, in that stage where we could be at the pub. And I think we've all kind of said the same thing. We're not going to be out at the pubs getting it large. We're going to be at home with our families. My little girl has sat and watched the last couple of games and she's really enjoyed it. And she's 7, you know, the face paint was on and I didn't think she'd be that interested, but it's grabbed her attention. I think Millie, you're going home and going to see your kids and be with your family. Yeah. And Holland, you're the same, sitting down with Alf, watching it on Sunday, have a few beers, of course, but it's not the same of being out on the street and being part of that community of getting absolutely blottoed and having a massive large time. But it'll be a different experience, but it might be the only experience we get to sit down with our kids and watch a England team in a final, unless you're me and you're thinking, well, in 2 years time, we're going to be in another final in the World Cup. But, you know, we'll save that for another time. But guys, I think we've all done our results. We can all agree it's been a fantastic tournament, I would say, in terms of quality of football. I want to just talk about one more thing and then we'll wrap it up. VAR. How good has VAR been in this tournament?
Hey, I forgot I wanted to mention that. I'm so glad you brought it up. VAR in this tournament is exactly how VAR should be. I don't know what they've done here that's different from the Premier League, but you don't even know it exists. With double, like, I don't know what, like, I hope the Premier League's like this next season, because it's been amazing. Honestly, they have not got it really involved. It's not ruined any games. It's not done nothing. Yeah, so yeah, I don't know. I couldn't pinpoint actually what the difference has been, but it's been brilliant.
I can tell you what the difference has been. The difference has been we don't over in the Premier League. We don't overanalyze, and we don't have to see the lines from 20 different angles. It's almost like they're saying this is the decision. VAR's gone to it in a studio somewhere else, and that's the decision. And let's go on with the game. Whereas in the Premier League, we are obsessed with going, well, let's have a look. Let's replay it again. Is the line? Get the referee in. Let's look at it again. And I think that's the delay in it. And I think the English referees that are doing it in the VAR are so still worried about making a mistake. And the referees in the past, this season, they did a bit more of going and checking the screen. The referee does the VAR sign, listens to his ear, and then he'll go over the screen if he needs to make a very quick decision. He's not spending half an hour looking at the monitor, worried about what this impact. And that goes back to what Miller and yourself have said in the past with the media side of things on players is equally as the referees. So, and I think it's been an absolute, obviously, hopefully it doesn't get used in the final against us and then we look like absolute morons. But Miller, what's your thoughts on VAR this tournament?
I think better level of referee that does not need to fall back onto VAR, which I think the Premier League, unfortunately, at the moment, doesn't have the best quality referee and they're all scared, ain't got backbone to actually make a decision themselves. So that's what I reckon the tournament's been done, because the quality of the referees.
But guys, I mean, let's wrap it up there. This is the last one in the season. Obviously, it's a bit of a bonus one for everyone. We threw it together quite quickly. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening, everybody, and all your support over the last season. There'll be a few more interviews coming up soon. And hopefully, we'll resemble this back in late September, early October.
Sports Social Podcast Network.